This meeting is now being recorded.
Good morning, and welcome to the I-95 Carter Coalition-sponsored webinar, Using Performance Measures to Justify Signal Systems on Arterials. As you may have heard already, I'm Joanna Riegel from KMJ Consulting, and we're happy to have you on this webinar this morning. Just a few housekeeping items that I would like to go through before Denise Marco begins. First, the call-in number is shown in the chat box and here on the screen. Your phone line will be muted throughout the webcast. You can press *0 to speak to an operator for any questions regarding your audio. And if you're experiencing any difficulty with the web or audio, there's a number on the screen. You can call 917-974-4810. As you heard, this web meeting is being recorded, and all materials will be available to participants after the web meeting. We'll be sending out an email with links to the items that will be available following on the Coalition's website. Since we are expecting a large group today, we're asking that all questions be put in the chat box. It's in the bottom right corner of your screen. Just type in the question. We'll be monitoring those, and then they'll be answered by the speakers during or following their presentation or at the conclusion of the webinar. Denise, would you like to welcome the group?
Can you hear me?
You sound great. Thank
you. Hi. Thank you, everyone, for being able to join us today for the I-95 Corridor Coalition-sponsored webcast. Today we're going to hear two presentations that outline two different approaches to capturing arterial performance measures. I'm going to provide a brief overview of how this webcast came to be, and then I'm going to turn it over first to Dan Farley of PennDOT. He'll be speaking on how they use probe vehicle data to justify signal investments to decision makers. This is a collaborative effort with researchers from Purdue University, some of whom are probably on the call today. Dan's going to be followed by Alan Davis from Georgia DOT, and he'll be speaking on how to measure arterial performance using automated traffic signal performance measures. So, before I get started, I'd like to welcome all of those on the call today. This is definitely one of our largest coalition-sponsored webcasts. We have over 179 registered attendees from 36 states. So the variety of those attending, as you can see, they're not only DOTs, representatives, but we also have attendees from MPOs, federal agencies, vendors, universities, and research institutes. I'm going to repeat Joanna's direction that if there's a question, please try to type it into the chat box. We'll be monitoring, and we'll look to have Dan or Alan answer the questions as they go through their slides, if appropriate, at that point. Otherwise, we'll ask them at the end of each of the presentations. So, since one-third of the folks on the call today, they're not members of the Corridor Coalition, I feel compelled a little bit to briefly update you on who we are and how this webcast came to be. So the coalition is comprised of 16 DOTs. We're along the I-95 corridor from Maine to Florida, and we also have the District of Columbia, so there's 17 member agencies. The text on the slide you're seeing is the same information that you can find on our webpage at www.i95coalition.org. So, and basically what we've done, as I talk about a TISMO program, we have divided the corridor into five TISMO-based hubs that are located on the bottom left of the screen. There's a region in New England. There's a New York, Connecticut, New Jersey area that we call Tri-State. There's a region in Philadelphia that we call Delaware Valley. And then there's two more, one in the Potomac region, which is Maryland, D.C., and Northern Virginia. And then finally, there's the Southern region, which are the North and the Carolinas, Georgia, and Florida, and parts of Virginia. So the coalition's currently, we're in the middle of redefining some of our program structure so that we have a more TISMO-based theme within the coalition. Previously, we focused a lot on incident management and traveler information, but now we're looking to address additional topics. And arterials and arterial management seem to be a logical next step as we start to include them, simply because the ramps off of Interstate 95 merge onto arterials and signals. So the transition seemed easy, it made sense, and that's how we got to this webcast today. The presentations that you're going to see are going to touch on three types of arterial monitoring technologies, probe data, re-identification data, and high-resolution controller data. Dan's going to speak on his work with probe data and high-resolution data, and Alan's going to look at Bluetooth and high-resolution data. So, without further ado, let me introduce Dan Farley. Dan is currently the traffic operations deployment and maintenance manager for PennDOT's Bureau of Maintenance and Operations. He focuses on highway safety and traffic operations. Prior to his current position, though, Dan was a traffic control specialist manager. He started his civil engineering career in roadway design, and then he followed that with a stint at the traffic signal unit. Dan's in his 12th year with PennDOT and his ninth working at the central office. He's a 2003 graduate of Pitt, where he earned a B.S. in civil engineering. In 2015, Dan received the PennDOT Secretary's Star of Excellence Award. So with that being said, I'm pleased to introduce Dan Farley.
Thanks, Denise. I'm actually having some technical difficulties with my computer, so if somebody can advance the slides, that's on the call. I'll walk through it.
I'll take care of that. This is Joanna, Dan.
Yeah, I have a paper copy, so we'll go off of that. But I just want to thank everybody for attending the call today. Denise indicated, I'm going to be talking about probe vehicle data and how we're using that probe vehicle data to kind of justify some of the decisions. So we can go to the next slide, which just wanted to start out by painting a picture of Pennsylvania. And some of the facts that we do have, we have 11,500 employees in 11 engineering districts throughout the state. We have four regional traffic management centers that operate 24/7, 365. And we do have, in 2016, responded to about 52,000 different types of events, whether it be work zone to incidents. And then we have just under 1,700 ITS devices throughout the state, whether it be variable message boards or cameras or other types of devices. So one of the main reasons why we're here today is we have a very large infrastructure network here in Pennsylvania. We have about 40,000 state-owned roadway miles that service, 12.8 million people. Our VMT is $102 billion a year, which then kind of leads to $264 million in annual congestion cost. And that kind of equates to environmental cost, 133 million gallons of wasted fuel, and then $6 trillion in congestion costs that do kind of make up Pennsylvania. Now, breaking it down further, going into the next slide, we're one of a few states that are very unique where, the DOT really hasn't in the past owned traffic signals, so they've been actually owned by the local jurisdictions. So as you can see, we have a large number of municipal traffic signal owners. We have about 1,200 traffic signal owners. Of the 14,000 traffic signals, as you can see, about 75% of them own 10 or fewer traffic signals. And of that, 80% of those are contracted services. So we have contractors that are doing service for the local governments. About 77% or 10,500 are actually on state highways. So really, we're trying to we've identified this problem for a number of years. Now we're trying to make strategic investments and be able to improve the quality of some of these arterial corridors. So going to the next slide, we have the Green Light Go program, which this was legislatively mandated in 2016, or it started actually in 2013, and then it was amended in 2016. What it is really it's a a funding program where we have $40 million annually to provide, you know, traffic signal management, maintenance, and operations throughout the state. The way we've tackled that is we have two different elements that we're kind of addressing at the same time. We have the local grant element, which we have a municipal grant program where it's all existing traffic signals are eligible. It's a 20% match with local governments to deploy various types of maintenance and operations activities. The program's becoming very competitive, the activities that you see there. In addition to that, we also have permitted the use of and deployment of DSRC technology as we kind of move forward. But that's the one element of the program is the grant program. We also have a PennDOT management component where the DOT is actually looking to take back ownership on certain key corridors to really kind of address the inter-jurisdictional concerns and issues on some of our most major corridors. With that, we do have a pilot project right now in our Philadelphia area on the Schuylkill Expressway where we have 160 traffic signals in 9 municipalities that we're looking to take over the operations. So really what we're here today in both presentations is really to figure on the right, you know, where do we need to be? I think both presentations are looking to kind of address these issues where, you know, just kind of example, you know, right now we're thinking jurisdictional needs. We need to be more focused on regional improvements. And then, you know, really moving from a reactive and output oriented, to more of a performance based and decision making process. So, those are just some examples there of where we're trying to move to and from. So on the next slide, want to start out with these are kind of the three key leading efforts that are really kind of driving the traffic signal performance measures. The first one is the Everyday Counts 4 initiative for the arterial performance measures. The pull fund study in the middle, that's really kind of where a lot of these core performance measures have been developed from is that pull fund study. And it's my understanding that, you know, we're looking to really kind of continue that. So if there's any interest in from anybody in the group here, you know, please, you know, reach out to me or the pull fund study leads on that for that project. And then the last thing is the NCHRP study, which this is an active study right now where we're actually looking to really hone in on data archive, you know, the data dictionary and really kind of bring some consistency to some of these traffic signal performance measures. So clicking through it, or looking at it from a corridor level metrics view, or, you know, from, you know, a drone type of view, what type of metrics are we really kind of focused on? And these are the metrics that I'm going to really be talking about here today. So from our initial deployment, we did it as a research effort in our Philadelphia area. As you can see, it's five of our 67 counties in the state really kind of encompass this. Why we did it there was they have about half of the traffic signals in that one region. 138 corridors with about 2,200 signals that were kind of addressed using this probe data. I'm going to get into the different tools that I have there on the side, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time in addressing those, but there has been three probe tools that have been developed as a result of this. Now diving a little bit deeper, looking at intersection level metrics or the high resolution metrics, these are the ones Alan is going to be talking about in a lot more detail. And these are really at the intersection and really kind of addressing some of the intersection needs. We're obviously looking to implement these where it's appropriate, but we looked at the corridor level metrics as something that we have an early action today to be able to kind of address, and I'll get into reasons why here in a minute. And then the last thing on this slide is trying to develop that relationship or interconnection between the corridor level metrics and the high resolution or the intersection level metrics. So we're actively trying to work on where does it make sense to really kind of build those relationships with these different types of metrics. So going to the next slide, the reason why probe data, you know, we're part of the, as Denise indicated, we're part of the I-95 Corridor Coalition, and there's actually a vehicle probe project as part of that. And Pennsylvania is an all-in state, and what that means is we get all of the probe data that the provider has available. So the vendor we selected of the three vendors, here, TomTom and NREX, we've selected NREX to do the data collection or provide data for us. We've been receiving real-time data and archive data since 2011. And then based on that, we've been using the data in our 511 system. We've also been deploying statewide travel times on message boards for over a year now. And really what we found is, you know, from the validations, the seven validations that have been done in Pennsylvania, the performance in with the probe data in our state has been relatively good. And one of the other reasons is, as you can see to the left there, our coverage area is very good as well, where we have about 16,600 miles of roadway that, you know, with the TMC coverage and then doing the XD segmentation, we're up to, 200 miles, and we have about 20,000 miles of arterials that are covered through that. Going to the next slide, the differences between the TMC and XD segmentation, just want to hit on this a little bit before we get into our presentation, is really the granularity of the data. As you can see from the TMC breakdown, we're at 0.37 miles with the TMC segmentation. And then as you get to the TMC, it's really down to the hundredth of a mile that you really kind of get into. A few things to also kind of bring up, we're really looking to reflect current real-time traffic conditions. We're getting reports of this information minute by minute, and generally, there's a 3 to 5 minute processing between what's actually on the roadway to what's actually being seen through the metrics. So on our next slide is the research effort, like Denise indicated, that we did with Purdue, where, really the problem statement was to, we're getting all this data. How can we use this data for justifiable decision making purposes for arterials is really kind of the main crux of the issue. So how are we, evaluating user costs, to do retiming maintenance, adaptive installation, and benefit cost evaluations? But also at the same time, and we'll get into this a little bit further when going through the metrics, is your travel time reliability, your variability, and a way of being able to prioritize corridors in an appropriate fashion. And then on the bottom there is kind of the focus area that I talked about before with the coverage area. So
Ben,
going to the next, yes.
There's a question in the chat box. Were there any HD segments, NREX HD used? Do you know?
I'm not sure about that.
Or is that the same as your XDs? I'll ask for more information out of the out of the chat box. Okay.
Okay.
XD.
No problem.
OIT out there. XD. Oh, they said XD, so I think you answered the question. It was a typo.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. Okay. Now getting into the main page here. This is our main landing page. We have this actually on PennDOT's internal network for our internal staff as well as consultants that have access to our internal network to be able to access these tolls. So there's actually three tolls. The first toll is the travel time comparison toll, which really kind of compares the travel time distribution from a single corridor over different time periods. Then our second is our arterial ranking toll, where we rank multiple corridors based on normalized median travel times as well as interquartile travel times over the same time period. And then the last is our congestion ticker, where we track speeds on the corridor and identify where we have locations of congestion on those corridors. So I'm going to go into each one of these with a little bit of detail, just so everybody can kind of understand it. So kind of going to the next slide, looking at the travel time comparison toll, we're really kind of focused on the cumulative frequency diagram. And what that means is here is a kind of a normal travel time based on timing parameters that you may already have set or that you may want to set on a corridor. So then from there, we move to developing looking at a specific timing plan. And then based on that timing plan, we can then develop graphs to look at the frequency of the occurrences of that travel time, but also then look at cumulative frequencies to really kind of move to the last graphic, which is looking at your cumulative frequency over your travel time on the corridor. So if we go to the next slide, what that and why is that important? Looking at it from a before and after evaluation, you do these graphics for each one of before and after, and then you essentially mesh those two together, and by meshing them two together, the better you move up and to the left, it improves your reliability as well as your travel time on the corridor. So those are actually quantifiable improvements as a result of the travel times that you do get. So kind of looking at the tool, going in our next slide, I'll show you how easy it is to really kind of implement these metrics and be able to use them. So on this slide, we would actually select a corridor. So we have from the drop-down, we would select a corridor, and then on the next slide, once you select the corridor, then you do your evaluation time period. So if you know of when you did retiming, you can implement that and do really that comparison very quickly. And then on the next slide, you would then move to looking at further refining your evaluation based on your time of day or days of the week or even your peak hours that you're wanting to do your evaluation on. So then entering those parameters very quickly, on the next slide, you would get these cumulative frequency diagrams and really kind of showing the benefits. And the nice thing about this tool is the fact that you can do these relatively in seconds and really evaluate and do adjustments in very quickly to use the tool. And the nice thing about this tool is it also has export features for the graphics as well as, and I'll get later on in my presentation, the benefits. So you're able to export out key pieces of information to do your before or after or your benefits evaluation very quickly with the tool itself. So that's kind of wrap up of the travel time comparison tool. Now I'm going to move to the arterial ranking tool, which is our next slide. And what that actually is this slide. I'm on slide six, page 16. We have two corridors: the Newtown bypass, which is in black, but you can see the speed limit travel time on that road as well. And then you have the US 1 travel time. So what we're doing effectively here is normalizing those travel times to bring them so we can map and rank them appropriate, looking at a median travel time over the speed travel time by the time of day. And where that kind of gets us to is in the next slide, we're able to rank corridors in a region based on that normalization of travel time. And being able to kind of see, all right, which ones are your worst corridors where you're having significant variation occurring based on that. So moving into the next slide, which another thing that's looked at with the arterial ranking tool is this interquartile range normalization, where we, what that means is we look at the 75th percent travel time and the 25th percentile travel time over the speed limit to get effectively a percentage of the impact those different travel time do have on the corridor. Then based on that, we can actually rank it the same way. As you can see on the next slide, we're looking at that normalization ranking and being able to identify which ones are the most significant based on that. So on our next slide, we have the reliability versus tendency, which really, we're bringing the two normalized rankings together and graphing them to essentially see which ones, from a reliability or tendency standpoint, are most outliers that we would either want to do a retiming on or that adjustments need to be made as a result of it. So tried to capture a just a quick visualization of one of our counties. This is Philadelphia County, just showing the various corridors in that county and the rankings and where those kind of measure up based on the interquartile ranking over the median travel time. So now moving into the tool and how the tool can be used relatively easily. You would then select a county and a corridor. You would first select the county or the region that you're in, and then you would begin to select the corridors that you want evaluated. Another thing that has been added with this tool is if you wanted to look at your highest ADT corridors, we have that information kind of built into there to be able to do that. And then once you select your corridors, you would then select your time period again, like we did previously. So you select the time of day, before and after, if you want to do before and after evaluations, hours of the day that you would want to do that. And then you would essentially then generate the maps. And as you can see on the next slide, you would get the frequency, the reliability and tendency graphics to show up on the graph based on the probe data that you're evaluating against. Another nice thing is just a simple toggle of the interquartile range on the top. You could see those graphics that I showed previously. You get those and are easily able to kind of see that and interchange those types of metrics very relatively easy. Moving on to the next one, just providing kind of a real case study. And we provided this case study as part of we did a TRV paper with jointly with Purdue on this, and really you can kind of see, based on some of this information, a lot of the benefits that are being shown from this, from, you know, everything from improvements in reliability, but as you can see in to the right there, the before and after, you're actually improving some variability as well, with the circled area there, to be able to do that. So that's the Artero ranking tool. I'm going to move now to our congestion ticker. And this is really kind of, you know, really what it is. It's really just tracking your travel time speeds along the corridor and breaking those up into percentages of your travel time speed. So going into the graphic, it's very similar to the other tools that I've shown you previously. You would select a corridor, and then you could generate the graphs based on the corridors that you select to see that traffic variation. A nice thing is a lot of these applications are developed in GIS, so we've worked with Purdue, so they were able to color code some of the corridors as well, so you can kind of see where your congestion breakdowns actually are along the corridor by doing a deep dive into that information. So then based on that, on our next slide, it's the benefit evaluation. Typically, this is the same benefit evaluation you would do typically by hand, but what we've done is being able to export a lot of data features out, we're able to then put them into a Excel spreadsheet where we have a step-by-step process on how to do that pretty easily, and you get these benefits. So we have five corridors, like I said, you know, that we've done with our research paper. And as you can see, of the five corridors, there's actually one corridor, or A5, which, you know, is really kind of the opposite. It's underperforming. And there's a little bit of background story behind that, and really what it kind of gets to is, when the evaluation was actually occurring, there was actually a resurfacing project on that corridor where the loops were actually cut on that corridor, and you can see the impacts that just a simple maintenance activity like, you know, doing resurfacing and cutting loops, what type of impact that would have on your corridor or your project. So, you know, from these five corridors, we were able to show a $30 million benefit. But in addition to that, I also have circled, you know, the environmental benefits, being able to pull out some of those typical, costs and benefits that we typically see from the Urban Mobility Report to be able to use that information. So now moving on to the next slide, this is just kind of a synopsis of, the different types of real world uses that you can use with this tool. Everything from, you know, signal timing, digesting that, you know, degrading that, but also, you know, looking at signal maintenance and where should we be doing retiming moving forward. Another key thing that we've actually used quite extensively is evaluating before and after deployments of adaptive systems and other types of major improvements that have been made with these tools. You know, special events, you know, impacts to special events, you know, just regular everyday events, impacts on crashes that do occur, weather events, being able to utilize that for that condition, as well as, like, you know, different types of land use changes that may occur as part of that effort. Another thing with the real-time evaluation on our next slide, we also looked at it from an incident impact analysis where we had actually a closure on one of our major roads in our Philadelphia area. And we looked at the data to see, all right, you know, that closure, what is the ripple effect immediately on the arterial? And as you can kind of see from the data, you know, there was very quickly there was a 2.5-minute increase on the westbound travel time on the corridor that we were kind of evaluating. So you could begin to do some event or incident planning based on the use of some of this data and how it works. So going to our next slide on how it works, I don't want to oversimplify this, I'll try to do my best. It's really very GIS mapping heavy, where you have to kind of lay out the corridors that you want to have mapped and really kind of map those along with the XD segmentation up front. So when you do get your API from NREX, that you're able to digest this information very quickly and very accurately. So a lot of the time of this project was really spent on this corridor mapping and verification of the corridor mapping to be able to do that. But once you have that mapping up and running, then it on the next slide it goes to really kind of how it works is, we get a direct API feed from NREX through our participation through the I-95 Corridor Coalition. And that goes into a minute-by-minute database that Purdue has created. They've also done some 15-minute regression analysis to really kind of speed up the performance processes of the tools. And then those go out to the performance metric algorithms as part of that. So that's kind of just an overview of how it works. On the next slide, our next steps, we're definitely looking at a kind of a phase two to this initial deployment. What we're looking at is, looking at our, like I said, we really just focused on one of our regions. So, the additional, other regions we want to get up and running. We also want to further refine the filters, by our counties, municipalities, even numbered route identifications. Even moving forward into subdividing corridors, because a lot of these corridors are very, very long, just based on our initial deployment of this. We also want to integrate real-time event data, and being able to see event data along with the impacts to some of the performance measures that have been developed. Executive and automated reports, obviously that's an interest. We also want to have that seamless export featured into the benefits worksheet kind of moving forward, so we don't have to kind of copy and paste it into Excel. We also want to look at integration of high-resolution data into the what Alan's going to be talking about with the automated signal performance data information. And then obviously look at other metrics and flags. We've had a very detailed conversation with our TMC operators down in our Philadelphia region to maybe figure out ways that an operator can use some of this information in real time, as opposed to before and after evaluations. So I guess based on that, just want to at this point I'll open it up for any questions, as well as I just want to kind of bring up that I did provide our TRB paper there. We did get accepted to also present this at ITS World Congress. And just want to reiterate, a special thanks to those individuals as well as others that were part of this initial project and being able to deploy it. So I guess with that, I'll take any questions.
Thanks, Dan. That was great.
Yep.
Dan, just so you're aware in the chat box, just to walk through a couple questions so that you're aware of the fact. One of them had to do with a question asked earlier with what was the earliest year do you have data for the corridor comparison tool? And how
yes.
Lee from Purdue, he was great. He answered that the data in PennDOT system started back, I think, in 2014.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, because that was the very first date that XD data was actually available. So we've actually gotten TMC data back to 2011, but yeah, as Hal indicated, the XD data we got is when that first started.
Great. There's another question is, were these tools developed and maintained on contract, or are they open source? Do you know?
The tools were actually developed through an IGA with Purdue directly. I'm not sure about the open source question. Hal would probably have to answer that.
Okay. What we can do, too, is we can take these questions and we can follow up and provide these out as well.
Absolutely.
In the future. Okay. And I think there were a couple more. Was any crash data, Gail Yuzerski was asking, is any crash data collected for or available as part of the other metrics?
We have not integrated crash data into it at this point. Obviously, that would be something that we're looking for in the future, but we have not done that yet.
Okay. And another question, it's related to linkages between the performance monitoring, asset management, and funding. Is PennDOT currently or planning to use performance measures to identify the needs for and priorities and prioritize traffic signal operations?
Yes, absolutely. That's one of the main reasons for doing it, in addition to trying to tackle the bigger issue, like I talked about before, with the interjurisdictional cooperation and deployment of different types of strategies in different areas.
Okay. That'll make Eddie Curtis very happy at Federal Highway. All right. Any other questions? I see that there are a couple more being typed in the chat box. We can take a couple, and then we're going to move on to Alan Davis's, and then we'll come back again so you all know. We'll come back and revisit anything that wasn't answered. Okay. So for now, I'd like to introduce Alan Davis. Alan currently serves as the Assistant State Traffic Engineer for the Georgia Department of Transportation. Prior to joining GDOT, however, he worked as a traffic engineer for South Carolina DOT and then also for a consultant in Columbia, South Carolina. He's a graduate of the University of South Carolina with a bachelor's in civil engineering. He's also a licensed professional engineer in South Carolina and Georgia, and he's a registered PTOE, Professional Traffic Ops Engineer. He serves as a member of the Signals Technical Committee for the National Committee on Uniform Traffic Control Devices. So with that, I'd like to welcome Alan Davis.
Thanks. Can everybody hear me? Or those that can respond?
Yes.
Sound great.
Thanks, Dan. That was really cool. Good information. Really glad to be able to take part in this webinar. Hopefully, I'll have some good information for you here on how GDOT has been using the automated traffic signal performance measures on our arterial signal operations. Just a quick overview of what I'll be talking about. Like Dan, I'll give a quick overview of Georgia for those of you unfamiliar with our operations and kind of how we approach things down here. I'll move into a specific program that we'll be talking about and how we've been using performance measures. It's our regional traffic operations program. Talk about some of the early performance measures that were used on that program and how they've evolved into the automated traffic signal performance measures. And really wanted to focus on some real-world applications, especially some incidents we've had here in Atlanta, Georgia, here recently, about how these particular performance measures really made a difference for us in dealing with a big problem, that being the I-85 bridge collapse. And then some recommendations moving forward if you take on any of these measures as part of your TISMO approach. So if you're not familiar with Georgia, we are comprised of 7 districts. We have 1 central office in Atlanta, Georgia, and 2 transportation management centers, 1 here in Atlanta and 1 down in Macon. We're currently looking at branching that out a little bit more to have some more district-based operation centers. We have a incident response maintenance program on our statewide freeways that we just kicked off in Georgia that's really opening the door for a lot of those applications. Signals-wise, though, since this is focused on signals and arterials, we have about 9,500 signals across the state. 6,500 of those are on the state route network, and of those, GDOT actively maintains about and operates about 3,500 of those traffic signals. So just to look at how we've broken up operations in Georgia, we really operate based on 4 main regions here, the region 1 being in the northern part of the state, districts 1 and 6. 2, districts 3 and 4, and region 3, GDOT district 2 and 5, and then in metro Atlanta, which is kind of a unique area all on its own, we have a the program we I'll be focusing on today is our regional traffic operations program. So RTOP, regional traffic operations program, what is it? It is the active management of regionally significant corridors in Metro Atlanta. There is a map over there that kind of shows some of the major interstate routes coming in and out of Atlanta. And the whole program's goal is to actively manage the signal systems on these corridors that come into Atlanta to provide for better operations. One of our main goals in this program is travel time reliability. We try to, as much as we can, when we're making decisions on operations, both improvements and evaluations of our systems and operations, to have them being data-driven decisions that, you know, the data we're collecting so much of supports and that we can go back and evaluate afterwards to make sure that our outcomes were what we were looking for. Our real, on top of that travel time reliability, is consistent maintenance and operations across the region. And partnership there is a key aspect of this program. The Metro Atlanta area consists of 12 counties, 28 different cities, 4 GDOT districts. We're not quite as fractured as Pennsylvania was from Dan's maps he had up earlier. But we have a lot of major corridors that go through many different regions in the area or different maintainers in the area. So, for example, if you lived out in the northwest part of the metro area, coming into work to downtown on one of our regionally significant corridors, you could pass through 5 different cities, 2 different counties, 2 different GDOT districts. Each one of those cities and maintainers operate and maintain their traffic signals differently, which both for better or for worse, which led to a really bumpy commute when you were coming in and out of town. So this program really sought to overlay a regional architecture to better manage those systems and to work together with a lot of our local agencies. This program is a consultant program. It is prime with 2 large teams led by Arcadis and Kimley Horn. So here's a look at what RTOP is today, just over in the regional area. These are our regionally significant corridors that we really focus a lot of our operations on. We've broken that up into 6 different zones, as you see there. Again, these are corridors of regional significance that really have an impact with traffic flow. A lot of them are in and cross around and parallel to our freeways in Atlanta that obviously, when there are incidents and bridge collapses, there are lots of challenges associated with this network. So RTOP, from the beginning, this program now is about 7 years old. Some of the main goals we had and how we had to measure them, operational detection was a big thing. We wanted to have a 95% of our detection in the field up and running. The way we measured that was manual field detection checks, literally going out and pushing the buttons and checking the controllers to make sure things are working. On operations, we tried to maximize throughput on the main line and reduce stops. We measured that with our good old buddy floating car study and monthly volume counts. Again, a very manual, tedious snapshot view of what these corridors and networks were operating at. And then proactive identification of events and failures and things. So that was all measured through counts, field identification of issues, not using a lot of technology and systems to really measure and identify those things. It was a lot of manual labor, if you will. So we identified some limitations with that. Our central software and local firmware that the state had invested in was a little out of date, and we identified that we needed a system in place that had better tools and technology built in to be able to capture some of these things. Like I said, a lot of the manual reporting was labor-intensive and time-consuming, and it was, again, just a snapshot of what was in the field and what was the conditions of the network were at that particular time you were looking, and didn't really capture the nuances and particulars of the system. Full of those inaccuracies, the full system performance, was it called. And as the program evolved, our mainline volume, that throughput was not really capturing our major goals of the program. Throughput was good, but there are a lot of other things we need to see and capture within the program to make sure we are really demonstrating value with the program and improving operations within the area. So one thing we did to be able to help do that is we deployed a lot of Bluetooth readers throughout the Metro Atlanta area. Over 230 have been installed. This is really feeding not only our travel time, so we wouldn't have these floating car studies once a quarter to be our measure anymore, but rather we had real-time data throughout the day for 24 hours to really capture what the program was doing. We were able to, because of the network architecture of RTOP, to share this with a lot of those local agencies throughout, so that this produced a uniform map that and information that crossed jurisdictional boundaries to really evaluate where issues were proactively and to jump on them and correct them as we could. We feed a lot of this travel time information as well into our ATMS system to feed to our 511 app and users as well. So this has been a big benefit for us in really evolving how we measure performance. This is just a snapshot of some of our improved reporting for travel times. We moved towards travel time reliability, so we used a lot of the PTI and PTI planning time index to really measure that. And again, just a snapshot of some of what our quarterly performance reports are for using a lot of that travel time data. So back to some of those system limitations. Okay, we got our travel time information down. Let's look at some of those other things we had. So we embarked on the procurement of a new signal software system. FHWA sponsored a few of us here to go on a scan tour to evaluate a lot of other things. One of our stops that was on that scan tour was with Utah DOT, where they kindly hosted us and showed off their automated traffic signal performance metric system. This is one of the earlier snapshots of what that system looked like for them. And we were very impressed and blown away with the way they were able to use this information, the data from high resolution controllers to analyze a lot of that granular and broader information about how their signals and signal systems were operating. So from that, we were able to develop a specification and advertisement for our signal software procurement that included high resolution data within the specifications. It was something we knew we had to have. And where we wanted to go, we wanted to make this the core of how we were operating and focused on feeding the operations that we were making and doing it. So we procured a Intellites product next time and MaxView for our local and central software to be able to do the very things that Utah demonstrated they were able to do on our scan tour. So for high resolution data, to be able to collect all this information, you really need three main things. You need good detection in the field. A lot of the metrics, which I'll get into in a minute, do not require detection. A lot of them come out of the box on the high resolution controller and can feed off the information that's being fed there. But when you have detection, you really open up to a lot of the additional metrics that can be pulled in. You also need some form of communications back to central to be able to collect this data, although there are ways to be able to collect this data using field collections, flash drives, small computers within cabinets. A lot of the more advanced controllers have USB ports within them to be able to collect that information too. But having communications really allows you to use the real-time data from high-resolution controllers. And again, high-resolution controllers, the third piece that you need to be able to deploy this type of application. So part of our software upgrade to get those high-resolution controllers, we have a pretty extensive 2070 architecture in Georgia already deployed. I think we're fairly unique in that about 99% of our state is on the same common platform, that being the Caltrans 332-336 environment. So we had a lot of 2070s out in the field that were in good shape, so we were able to just upgrade the CPUs on those, take advantage of that architecture to not have to buy a whole bunch of new controllers or cabinets. As part of this, we had a turnkey deployment, both the conversion of the software and deployment, field testing, and integration of it to the field. We wanted to, and as well as training, we wanted to knock it out in one fell swoop to get this out as quick as possible so that we can take advantage of all the resources there. And GDOT has a habit of supporting a lot of not only our state routes, but also our local routes. We see tremendous benefit of having that common system throughout the state in terms of training, usability, knowledge transfer with a lot of the technicians and engineers. So we wanted to maintain that commitment to a lot of our stakeholders to provide this system to them as well. And we also wanted to include a statewide implementation of automated traffic signal performance measures. We had seen tremendous value in it within our scan tour and working with some of our peers in a pool of funds study. We knew that's where we needed to go and what we needed to implement. So here's a snapshot of where we are today. This is the updated Utah DOT source code that's available through FHWA. This is a snapshot of our website. It's currently behind our firewall. We'll have it, like Utah and others, outside of our firewall here eventually. We're working with our IT department to do that. We currently have just over 3,100 signals online and logging high-resolution data that grows every day as we continue to deploy out our updated signal software. Again, we use the Utah DOT-produced source code that's hosted by FHWA currently. You probably heard a lot about that through Everyday Counts 4. We want to make this our primary tool for operations and maintenance of traffic signals, and I'll get into a little bit how we're going to do that here in a minute, but there's so much potential and value in this data and the way it's aggregated. We see the benefit and ability to use this information in a ton of different ways. That's just a closer view of where throughout the state we have this deployed already for our high-res controllers. You see we've got some holes there that we're doing a district-by-district deployment there, but over 3,100 signals so far that are collecting this. So here are the available metrics that are there. The ones that are in blue are ones that run without having any detection that most controllers can use that. The green ones here require detection, whether it's stop bar or advanced detection. And then that red one there for speed requires a special, I think that the Utah code is only integrated for Wavetronics, but it requires a even further special detection. I'll get into a little bit more detail about how all these are used. So here's the Purdue phase termination. This is a metric we use a lot. So just a snapshot of what's going on here on your y-axis over there. You've got your phase number, and on your x-axis you have your time of day. And the different colors you see there on the bottom represent different phase termination events. Every time the phase terminates, what was the cause for it to go? And I want to highlight here that these, in the morning here, this is a situation where we were getting calls about somebody stopping at a side, or on the main line for a side street throughout the night. So in the morning, we sent the text out to go look at it, and everything looked fine. As you can see, let me use this draw function here. Oh, that's not working. Oh, well. Over there in the plan 4 part of this graph, you can see that those red dots go away, and then in the middle of the night they come back again. So this was an issue where, there was obviously a problem in the middle of the night. We kept getting calls, and we'd go out in the day and not see the issue. But it turned out that the issue that was present here, here's a snapshot or a screenshot view of this intersection where we were getting this complaint at. The problem was faulty video detection. We had some old equipment out there that had been failing and didn't really work too well. There's a lot of glare on the street, so in the nighttime, the street lights would pop up a lot of bad calls throughout there. So we were able to fix that. We were able to evaluate this product and figure out whether or not we needed to have it within our qualified products or not. And also at this intersection, which happens to be extremely busy, we were able to replace with equipment with a different type of technology that was still able to maintain the operations at this intersection. Another great example of a metric we use is the Purdue coordination diagram. Real quick, again, on the left axis there, the y-axis, the cycle time, and your hours throughout the day there. The green line you see on this graph, of course, is when the signal turns green, the yellow line when it turns yellow, and the red when it turns red. All those black dots you see there represent an actuation by the setback detectors. So right there in the middle of the day in plan 38, from 9 to 12, you see that there's a lot of black dots below that green line, which means that there was a lot of vehicles arriving at that signal when it was red. This is not good, obviously, for coordination through the signal. So you can see it about 12 o'clock, 11:30, the problem was noticed by engineers and was the offset at this location was adjusted. And you can see the immediate impact with all those black dots shifting up above the green line, meaning that they were arriving at the signal when it was green. So immediate real-time improvement, the system was able to catch it and notify an operator of the issue. It was able to be corrected before we got even a single phone call about it. Very powerful tool. Another big tool we use a lot is the approach volume. This is pulling volume counts off setback detectors at intersections. This has been useful enough providing data to others, using data for basic analyses, cross-product analysis for left turn, you name it. If you need to balance your directional split in terms of offset, which direction are you seeing your volumes during which peak, and so on and so forth. Lots of valuable planning data that comes from this. See peak hour factors, total volumes, directional volumes, peak hour volumes. Very good stuff. This is a newer thing we've been able to use since we've upgraded to the open source code from UDOT, is the Purdue split failure. This is a very, very cool tool. Basically what it means It's measuring your occupancy rates before and after the light turns red for a phase. So what that means though is when you experience a split failure is that you can assume that you did not have adequate time to serve the demand that was at that intersection. So for us, this minor movement you're looking at here, this phase, this is a lot of peak hour split failures at this intersection. Well, this intersection is very over capacity. There's a lot of traffic, especially during peak hours. So we're not all that surprised to see a lot of split failures during the peak hours. You know, it's not great. It's not ideal. But that is, all those yellow lines there are where the system recognizes there was a split failure. There was demand present after the light turned red. So that's something we'd expect to see it during a peak hour. But at the same phase, the same intersection, this minor movement also saw non-peak hour split failure during lunch. This is not something we'd expect and something we know we can do something about. So this is an issue where there was a lunch rush hour into this particular shopping center making this left turn, and we were able to adjust the time at this intersection to be able to better compensate. You can see how it drops off there right after 1:30. It was adjusted there to accommodate for that. It's a very powerful tool. I'll get into a little bit more of how we use this to manage our regional traffic operations program here in a second. I borrowed this slide from UDOT because, one, we're not using it yet, but I love this. It's not just these performance measures are not just for operations. This is an application that Utah is using to measure red light running. So this is essentially a close-up of the Purdue coordination diagram. The yellow bar down there is when the light's yellow. The dark red when you have an all-red clearance, and then the lighter red is when you have the opposing phase is green. So all those black dots represent stop bar actuations or a detector zone just in front of the stop bar. And as you can see with that little box there, there's a lot of cars at this intersection that are in plan one that are in the intersection after their phase is red. It looks like you have a red light running problem. So again, look at the questions that are up there. Is the green time too short? Is the coordination poor? Or sight distance? Do you need law enforcement? This really helps you dial down and focus on where you may have a safety problem. It's a very interesting and powerful tool that's not just for operations, but also just for safety. So looking at some of the ways we've really used this, used these tools so far as we've been diving into them, we had a consultant retiming project come through and time some signals for us, and immediately after acceptance and fine-tuning, we started getting a lot of calls. They weren't good calls. The users of the system were very unhappy with the outcomes that came from this retiming project. So we went and started looking in the data and what was there and working with the consultant, and we can see that when we were getting the calls in the PM there, we had a lot of cars arriving at the end of or when the phase was green. This was resulting in very poor coordination. A lot of frustrated drivers stopping when the light was red. Not something we want to have when we're paying a consultant to go out and retime and optimize our system. So this is a situation we were ready to not only improve the operations of the system here, but also move forward in evaluating the approach we had for this consultant on other retiming projects. Another way we use this, there's a tool built into the Utah source code called the SPM Watchdog. Essentially what this application does is it analyzes the data from the previous day, goes through it and looks for certain traits and attributes that indicate certain things. This particular shot here shows signals that had too many max out occurrences between 1 a.m. and 5 a.m. So what that tells you is situations where you probably have detection that is out or not working during the middle of the night. So just focusing on one location here. SRA to SR101 phases, this is two left turn phases we had here. We had maxed out at 100% during the middle of the night. So immediately that's telling us that, in fact, there is a problem here. So we'll dial into the Purdue phase diagram here, Purdue phase termination diagram here, and you see that phases 1 and 5 and D are maxing out, not just in the middle of the night, but 24/7. This is not something we would have seen without this data. So we were able to dial in to the close to the intersection here. We looked at the alarms that the central system was producing, and no alarms. So detection appears to be working. So what's the issue here? So it turns out the loops were out at one point, and the operators, the contractor that went out and installed those loops forgot to turn off the max recalls that were on phases 1 and 5. So this is a quick operational thing we were able to fix. at this intersection that we were able to use the SPM watchdog to draw our attention to and focus on where we had an operational issue that was based on just a simple error that I know I've made 1,000 times. So let's get to the real meat of how we've been able to use this. I mean, as you have probably heard in the last month or so, we had a major incident in Atlanta where we had a section of I-85 in downtown Atlanta collapse due to a fire. This was a very unique challenge we had to deal with and mobilize quickly on. The section it fell in was in the, if you remember back to my earlier slide, where we had lots of different jurisdictions that are throughout Atlanta. This fell right in the middle of about 4 of them. Lots of arterials around there that were carrying lots of traffic, and this interstate alone was carrying over 250,000 vehicles a day. So where do all those cars go? The bridge fell about 6:30, 7 o'clock at night. On a Thursday, and we had to mobilize our engineers quickly. Within 4 hours of this bridge collapsing, we were able to coordinate with our engineers and our regional partners to implement lots of detour plans, fine-tune them throughout the night, and kind of hold our breath for the next day and monitor things how they go. But taking a look at the detour that this particular bridge collapse affected, that picture on the left side of your screen there shows the red section there was where the interstate was closed. The green section there is a parallel interstate that route that was carrying some of the traffic. We had one lane southbound and 2 lanes northbound open on that. And then the blue shows the arterials where we were detouring a large portion of that traffic around this particular area. Two of those routes were state routes, state highways, and the third one there, the Cheshire Bridge Road, was a local route. Fortunately, our regional traffic operations program was operating the traffic signals on. And, of course, you see on the right there that the freeway bypass that we had in place to deal with this as well. So just a snapshot of the day after where we implemented a lot of special detour plans. So you see the count of the candy cane section there in the middle is where the interstate was closed. Each one of those dots, those green squares, represent signals in the immediate area that we were actively managing throughout this whole incident. This particular shot was during the PM plan. So we typically run plans in the 30s there. So you see a lot of 35s, 31s in there, and then you see a lot of 84s, 85s, 46s, 115s, a lot of different plans that are not that start with a 3 that show a lot of where we had to implement very special plans to deal with how people were going. There was a big question, of course, throughout those first days of where 250,000 vehicles, detour vehicles, relocate. People are very good at finding open capacity, especially with tools like Waze that they have in their vehicles today. So we had to deal with it, never changing. You fix the demand on one section of road, and all of a sudden Google fix it up, and all of a sudden you have this latent demand filling your gap there. So it was a very dynamic, changing situation in terms of travel patterns that we had to deal with. Again, we implemented the special plans that we continue to fine-tune even to this day, 30-some-odd days later into the closure. But we really wanted to know, as we were doing this, was what we were doing effective? We didn't want to just go out there and crank up the cycle length and let the main line go and leave everybody else out in the dust. We wanted to make sure that we were making good decisions to balance the whole network. This isn't a nice grid network. There's lots of weird crossing angles and farm country roads that have been built up in the major highways throughout this whole area. We wanted to make sure we were balancing the demands as best we could, not knowing exactly where traffic was going to be moving. So just a snapshot of some of the arterial volumes that we experienced throughout this whole endeavor up to sometime last week. This is what this graph shows. That green line up top is Cheshire Bridge Road, which is our primary detour route. It was a brutal road. It took on a lot of traffic. At one point, it had over 130% increase in volume over normal. But I want to point out that on average, you saw a 10.5% increase in on weekdays, we saw a 15% increase, but we were able to really normalize that throughput within by week 2. The first week of this disclosure was spring break, so we got a little break there. But as soon as normal traffic patterns came back, we were able to see as those graphs got the bottom section of those graphs there kind of normalize and flatten out, more predictable patterns and shifts that we saw. You'll see that weekday traffic of 15%. That was a lot of, when you have already overcapacity highways, it was real impressive to see our engineers handle that extra capacity. But again, we didn't want to have just throughput on those main highways. We wanted to make sure we were managing all phases, all demand that was on those networks as well. So we relied heavily on monitoring split failures through the high-resolution data, the performance measures. And fortunately, throughout that, obviously the detour route had a high number of split failures because there was a lot of demand there that just couldn't be served due to the amount of capacity it experienced. But if you look at all those lines down below, right around the zero axis, this graph, you see even some of those lines that saw split failures well below average, some just above, no more than 20%. So we really felt like this was a good example of how we were able to not only manage the mainline demands and moving detour traffic through our congested system, but also the minor movements of side streets that we're also seeing tremendous increases in demand. We also relied on a lot of our probe data that we have, our Bluetooth readers. This is just a snapshot of the various days we were looking at to really measure how travel times were doing. Throughout there, compared to normal, the first week was a little hit or miss. You can see even on our PM there, we had a 15% decrease in average travel time, which when you have a major bridge closure, it means you're probably giving a little too much time to your main line there with your signal timing. So we're able to use this data to really look at how we are effectively using those main lines. And on average, the AM saw a 21% increase in travel times, 26% in the PM. That equates to 3 and 5 minutes of increased delay, respectively. But not only that, we were able to use this data, our travel time data, as well as our high-resolution data, to look at traffic outside the incident zone, if you will. What were the change in commuter patterns outside of the perimeter, the 285 bypass area of Atlanta? And volumes were fairly normal throughout that region, but what we did notice is that peak directions actually shifted on a lot of our main corridors, where on one road it would be normally heavy eastbound in the morning, but during the closure time and still today, we see that has switched to be a heavy westbound movement. So being able to monitor the data and adjust that in real time has been tremendous to us and not something we would be able to do without the high-resolution data. A quick snapshot of how we use some of the high-resolution data to measure our volume and performance and just get a snapshot of the delay impact that was from this whole closure. This is the detour route I mentioned earlier. Cheshire Bridge Road normally carries about 21,000 vehicles a day. And then during the closure, it jumped up to an average of 43,000 vehicles a day. So that's over 100% increase in volume that still continues currently, even though we've had some openings back up. Another detour route that carried a lot of extra traffic was Peachtree Road. It normally carries around 42,000 vehicles a day. During the closure, that jumped up to 55,000 on average, and it's been a little bit higher. Again, a 30% on average increase in the volume. And so that's not a major of a volume increase as the Cheshire Bridge detour route. What we did notice is that our peak hours were very extended, and that having this data to be able to back up that up, validate it, and evaluate both before and after allowed us to know when we needed to extend our peak plans in the field and see how well they are performing and adjust as needed. So if you want to implement performance measures, our experience with them from both when we first visited Utah DOT to now as we've begun to really dive into using them is there's extreme value in this data. It's taking a look at systems across our state, not just in Metro Atlanta, about how we're able to better evaluate and focus on where our systems, where our weak points, where our trouble spots are. It focuses where we need to send our resources and make improvements, and not only make those improvements, but measure how effective they were. One big downside to a lot of this data is that it's a lot of data. Our IT folks are not happy with me right now because even though I told them I need 3 terabytes of data, that's a big commitment for them to be able to manage and on the equipment side. So it requires managing any kind of large database of this kind requires a lot of coordination with your IT department and making sure you have the back-end capabilities to maintain everything. We lean heavily on early adopters, Indiana DOT, Utah, Minnesota. They have a lot of experience in using this data, this information, and the ability to use this information. So there's a lot of technical knowledge and experience that's out there. The the open source nature of this product is extremely valuable in that if we, GDOT, come up with a Georgia metric or a Georgia analysis tool, it's something that we want to be able to share with the practitioner community at large, and I'm very thankful for FHWA's effort in hosting that open source aspect of this platform. It's very important also that you not just collect this data, but you also use it. I know we have a challenge with a lot of our engineers, and it's something new. It's not something that's necessarily familiar with, but it's convincing them, our own folks and the consultants we work with about the value of this data. We found that as soon as it's experienced and seeing the benefit of it, the light bulb essentially turns on and it's seen. But you got to be able to use this data. Just collecting it is not of much value. So putting it to use is essential. And also know what you have in your system. If you have a bunch of electromechanicals and signals falling into the road, no amount of technology is going to make those work as efficiently as you want it to. A state of good repair is always the bottom of your foundation of any kind of system. So before any investment in technology and resources, know what you have and have a plan of what your outcomes are. It's something we've very much experienced not only with ourselves but some of our partners as well. I want to make mention of the pool fund study that fed a lot of this data and development. Purdue University put together these two documents that really detail both how these signal systems work as well as how you can integrate them into your business processes as an agency. These have been tremendously valuable resources for us, and I'm sure all other users of the system so far can attest to that as well. Big thanks to the Pool Fund study we participated in developing a lot of this literature. I see I got a few questions there, but of course here's my contact information if you want to email me any questions or anything.
Sure. Alan, in the box here, there's a couple questions we held off. Can I ask you some of these pretty
quickly, yeah,
I think? One of them is that back on the UDOT slide, was that a right turn on red?
I'm not sure. I think that I got that. I borrowed that slide from UDOT, and I believe that intersection was looking at a mainline approach that did not have a right turn on red.
Okay. And then another question came in as far as what's your central traffic signal systems for the Atlanta region?
We are the product that we purchased was Intellite's MaxTime and MaxView. We are transitioning from Siemens CPAC and Tactics. But the one we were using for the state, providing for the state, is Intellite's MaxTime and MaxView.
Another question came in as far as what type of detection do you use?
We are predominantly a inductive loop state. We use that pretty extensively across the state. We don't have the freeze-thaw conditions that a lot of our friends up north have. So loops work pretty well for us. We also rely heavily on some non-intrusive methods, both video and radar. We've been putting out a lot more radar recently, because we've noticed some better performance out of it in certain scenarios. But for the most part, we are inductive loops.
Okay. Another question came in as far as, by what means did you get the traffic volumes when you had the bridge collapse, and how do you increase your throughput?
All of the volume data I showed on this presentation was collected through the ATSBM system. That was collected based on setback detection and stop bar detection, and all that data being aggregated into the system and produced through the web portal. The increase in throughput was a lot of cycle length increases, a lot of active management signals. Cheshire Bridge, for example, usually that's a very local road. It carries a lot of directional local traffic. So we usually try to keep the cycle length and the splits pretty balanced out there. The cycle length fairly low, not above 100 seconds if we can deal with it. For this particular application where we experienced a heavy north-south traffic flow for the detour route, we were able to really increase that cycle length up to upwards of 180 and 200 seconds, which obviously, and we kept the same ratio of splits as well, given, but again, favoring the north-south a lot more, which then opened up that green band from the north-south a whole lot more, which is where you saw that increase in volume.
Okay. And another question came in as far as how many different types of controllers do you have in the region?
We have a host of 2070 chassis that we use, but for our software deployment, we've been deploying new CPUs, as I mentioned, that were they're all Intellite's 1C boards to carry their MaxTime software. But we have a host of different 2070 chassis we use on all the major suppliers and brands.
Awesome. Okay. Well, Dan and Alan, great stuff.
now that you guys on the web, now that you've heard from the presenters, what we'd like to do is want to hear from you. And what we're going to do, rather than send out a survey, which you guys probably get 300 million of them and take up a lot of time, we're going to poll you on the screen and ask three questions in a polling format. The questions are going to appear on the screen. You'll be able to select an answer, and then we'll get back to you guys with the answers that may arise. So hang on for 2 seconds. I'm going to turn this back over to Joanna Riegel, and she is going to walk through the three questions for you. Okay, Joanna?
Okay. Let me just make this a little larger for everyone.
All righty.
Okay. Have these presentations been helpful in understanding the varying technologies?
And we'll give it a couple seconds, and then we'll move to the second question. Right, Joanna?
Right. Correct.
Okay.
I'm still seeing a couple more people chiming in. I think we're almost done. We're going to end the poll in 3, 2, 1. Okay. We're going to go with the next one now. Give me a moment, and okay. We're going to maximize this. There are a number of approaches available to implement automated traffic signal performance measures. You can select all that you are familiar with.
All right, we'll take multiple answers on this one.
Correct. It will take multiple answers.
Okay,
I think we're about done. We're going to close that now. And finally, I'll hide this one, and we'll one last question for everyone.
One last question, yep.
What is the most predominant barrier within your organization to implementation of automated traffic signal performance measures?
Three choices: infrastructure. And infrastructure could be anything from controllers and the lacking the capability to collect high-resolution data. Infrastructure could be communications, meaning lack of or inadequate capability, or lack of detection, or something else. If you do organization and staffing, that simply could be management, not being supportive of investments or inadequate staffing or staff training. And the third one being resources is limited capital funding or limited operations and maintenance funding or limited access to grants.
Okay, I think we're still getting a few more responses in.
All right.
Okay, I think we're going to close the poll in 3, 2, 1.
Great.
We're going to hide that.
Thank you. We will share these with everybody who is registered on the webinar. I don't know if there's any more questions in the chat box. I'll give it a couple more seconds. While we're waiting for that, I know the coalition, I want to thank Dan. I want to thank Alan. They were great presentations. I know that we really take pride in being able to showcase the work of our members. So if you found this type of webinar to be helpful, then please let us know. Our contact information is going to come up in a second. There it is. Please feel free to contact me if you have questions on the coalition or the webinar. Alan and Dan, that's their phone and email. So I think that will do it. I want to thank everyone again. We're about 7 minutes ahead of time. I think have a great day. And we will follow up.
Thank you. Thank you especially to those speakers.
Thank you to the speakers. Bye-bye. Great job. Bye-bye.